is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now, back to Frank Cusimano from the McBride & Son Home Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.
So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
And welcome back. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock every Friday at 10:30. It's our pleasure to welcome the most knowledgeable football man in the world, the man who watches about 12 hours of tape a day on football. He is Oliver Connolly from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, back from the Super Bowl. Oliver, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, sir. Thanks for having me.
So how much blame does Kyle Shanahan deserve for that loss for the Atlanta Falcons?
It's really tough, and this one I struggle with, just kind of way I evaluate these things, because I don't think people fully comprehend how much in the NFL every single play has a kill call, right? So they're calling two plays every single time, and it's the quarterback's responsibility to either call one play or kill it and get to another one, whether it be a run or a pass. So you'd have to be in the organization to know, did he indeed call run plays and Matt Ryan killed them and went to a certain matchup? I think if you go through them one by one, as much as people want to jump on Shanahan, if they execute the plays and Devontae Freeman doesn't blow a block and Jake Matthews doesn't hold on one play, then they're Super Bowl champions right now. So he deserves some blame. Sure, it wasn't the best game plan in the second half, but I think it's pin it all on him would be kind of silly.
But I would venture to say that if you had a 8th grade football coach and he was the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons, and after Julio Jones's catch, he says, okay, we are going to run the ball up the middle three straight times. We don't care if we get a combined 4 yards. We're going to kick the field goal, and we're going to make it an 11-point game. I would think that almost anybody would do that. And what troubles me about Kyle Shanahan is, I guess it was yesterday in his press conference or the day before in San Francisco, where he said, well, that's what we do. We don't change anything. You have a chance to win your first ever Super Bowl. You change things, and you kick the field goal, and you move on. It's not what you do. That type of arrogance is, you know, that's what will get you fired, or that's what will lose you a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no one's ever confused the Shanahan for having a small ego, right? Like, this is what they
no.
are. what was interesting to me about the press conference is they radically changed their game plan on both sides of the ball. So they're acting like they did what they always do. They did not. When you go through play by play, that was not their usual game plan. In terms of throwing the ball and so on, I guess that it was. But I would defend him just by saying that he didn't call the Jake Matthews holding play. You know what I mean? Like, if there's less tackles that would hold their Super Bowl champions, I would basically say, now, you could have just knelt the ball and kicked the field goal, and they'd probably be holding a Lombardi right now. But as I said, he didn't call those plays where his guys whiffed on the execution.
What do you think about Shanahan, by the way, in San Francisco and saying that he's not going to hire an offensive coordinator? That seems a little bit arrogant. I know you want to do what you do best, but I'm not sure if that's the right call, is it?
No, I don't love it, and this is the problem I have with the league all the time, is they hire these guys, it's such a weird hiring process, right, where you hire guys who have no experience in the job or don't necessarily have the skill set to transition. They did one job well, and so you hire them. It'd be like being great on a radio show, and then you make them the director of the radio station. Like, why would those skill sets translate? I don't get it. If that's what he wants to do, then I guess I understand it. I have a big concern with the fact that both the GM and him have veto power. How can you be in the room and both of you have veto power on players? It makes no sense to me.
What jumped out at you? Like, when you turn off your television set, or when you stop looking at Super Bowl tape, I don't know when you stop doing that, what's the one thought that you hold after Super Bowl 51?
From the Super Bowl?
Yes.
I was really impressed by Atlanta in the first half, how they changed, like I said, everything they've done all season for that one game. They played straight man-to-man coverage, and they said, let's take away the thing they do best, which is crossing routes to Julian Edelman, and we'll double-team that guy, and we're not going to let them beat us doing what they do best, which is a very Belichickian way to play a team in fact. And I didn't think Atlanta would do that because they were so young, and you saw in the second half how because they played so much man coverage and they only really played zone all season long, just how gassed they were. And they only lost that game, in my opinion, because they got tired. Had they remained healthy and not fatigued, which is obviously a big part of the game, but had they not fatigued, I think they would have walked it quite comfortable.
I don't know if I asked you this last week or not, but now with another Super Bowl victory for Brady, is he the greatest quarterback of all time?
To me, the resumes aren't even close. I don't comprehend this concept. And I get it's a good achievement that, you know, Montana never lost one. That's all nice. But that's like rewarding someone for not going as far in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Why are we doing Brady a disservice for losing some games in the playoffs rather than just getting there is an incredible achievement. I don't think we put enough stock in how impressive it is to get there time after time. For all his years in the league, he's been in the Super Bowl 46% of the time. It's remarkable. In a sport that is designed keep you from winning again and again. So, to me, the resume just doesn't stack. You know, no one else has even come close to stacking up with it in my mind.
I know Brett Favre had a tremendous year in Minnesota at the end, and Warren Moon stuck around for a while. But you hear these stories about Brady not allowing, like, any sugar or alcohol into his diet, and he trains year-round. I wonder if he'll be playing at this level at age 40, at 41, 42.
You would think so. I mean, I think avocado ice cream is his specialty, right? That's the one the Gronk always references that he tries to get everyone to eat. So, I mean, the guy is just in, obviously, supreme health. And I think what he does more than other players, not that other guys aren't in shape all year round, is he is in attack mode, you know, through 65. He just doesn't take a day off of being the best quarterback in the world. I would assume, given that play style, that unless there's a massive physical drop-off like those with Peyton Manning where you get the neck problem, there's no reason why you couldn't do this for another couple of years, I wouldn't have thought.
All right, let's just put yourself in the role of a Hall of Fame voter. I want you to rank these three on next year's ballot: Randy Moss, Isaac Bruce, and Terrell Owens.
Okay, well, I didn't follow Isaac Bruce as closely, so let's just pass that. I wasn't as involved in that. I think, to me, Randy Moss is the most devastating threat we see in the league, where just you could not simply cover the guy. And I know Jerry Rice, for everything he did, is a remarkable player as well. I think there was unstoppable two receivers that played the game just physically on Moss and Calvin Johnson. So I would put Moss at the top, then I'd put Owen second, then I'd put Bruce third.
And what do you think of Bruce anyway? Give us a little your take on when you did see him.
Again, I just wasn't as close to that as I was with some of the latest stuff. But, I mean, there's no doubt I've been through all the people who go into these stuff in detail and figure out what should the correlation be of one Hall of Fame, and does that mean another guy gets it? And he passes the test. And I don't understand the sanctity of why it has to be a certain number of guys a year. If we have 15 guys, let's put 15 guys in. Do you know what I mean? Like, it makes no sense to me, this concept that we can only have 5 guys going in a year with a couple of extra guys on kind of senior power. If we have 12 players, let's put them in.
When you looked at Warner on tape, and I know it didn't last long enough, but what did you see?
He's one of my favorite guys. I think we mentioned this last week, that it is not discussed enough, because Peyton Manning is kind of the figure of, you know, doing things in the line of scrimmage and kind of changing the game in terms of the verbiage and how guys control things. Warner didn't get anywhere near his credit. What they did, game plan week, of almost bringing an entire offense to the facility on a Monday, and he had to know everything. And everyone else's responsibility by the Sunday. And no one, from my time covering the sport and my time following tape and being in and around coaches, has done that since. Teams have made things far more simplistic, because that would just be easier, right? To make it easier. I've never seen as complex a system as those St. Louis Rams teams ran. And Warner had to run the entire thing himself.
All right. The two most talked about names in the entire NFL offseason, ironically, are both going to be Eastern Illinois grads, Tony Romo and Jimmy Garoppolo. How do you see what's going to happen there?
I think Romo is interesting to me. If he can find a way to get himself to Houston, and you could talk, it's really tough to do financially because of the Brock Osweiler contract, right? But, and I'm not going to tell Tony Romo how to live his life, but all he is about is trying to get a Lombardi trophy. And he made $20 million this year for not playing, then you could kind of in your mind just say, well, you know, I just balanced out and I'll play for that minimum in Houston and balance out the money that way. So if he can get himself to Houston, then it would be game on for really making a run at New England. Garoppolo, I think they're going to trade him. I think they're going to get a huge haul back. I think people would be surprised by what Garoppolo's ratings were coming into the draft. He was, a lot of teams had really high grades in him. They were just concerned about the jump up in competition. And now he's proven, be it a small sample size, that he's fine with the jump. The jump is nothing. So now we're just looking at traits, tools, and understanding playbooks. And, I mean, he's proven that 10 times over with New England. So I think he's going to get a massive haul, a first and a second-round pick, something like that.
Wow, so the Super Bowl champions could end up with two first-round picks if they give up Garoppolo and they keep their own.
And what's funny about it is the Deflategate suspension took a first-round pick off them, and by getting that, they got to play Garoppolo and window shop him, and they may come out better from it. They may be able to move in for first and second-round pick, having lost the first-round pick and having Brady suspended.
Wow. Speaking of Deflategate, what did you think of Roger Goodell and the awkward handshake with Brady, getting booed off the stage, getting out of there real quickly? I mean, it couldn't have been more awkward for the commissioner of the NFL, who, oh, by the way, I think made $34 million last year.
Yeah, and I love it. And I love that you have now real defiance from players. I don't know if you saw Joe Thomas's comments that he thought it was very weaselly. I mean, this is a future Hall of Fame player saying this about the standing commissioner. So, yeah, I'm happy to see, because I'm not in any way a Goodell fan. So I'm happy to see now play standing up. But that's where, if they're going to try and enact change and change kind of the leadership at the top, it's going to have to come from these players up, because there's no reason for the owners to change anything.
All right, sir. Great stuff. We'll talk soon. Thank you very much for your time, Oliver Connolly.
Always fun, Frank. Thanks.
All right, Oliver Connolly, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Before we go to break, why buy an old home with all the to-dos when you can buy new? This February, save thousands on a new McBride & Son inventory home in nearly 50 locations across Metro St. Louis. McBride & Son Homes has over 100 inventory homes ready for a quick move-in. Pricing on these homes range from the mid-100s to over $1 million. Homes to fit every lifestyle and design with you in mind. You know, I've been in a ton of their homes, and boy, they're just spectacular. They really are. There's something different about a McBride & Son home. And you got to keep in mind this, too. If you add up the biggest home builders in the St. Louis area, like 2 through 10, they don't equal what number one is. So don't buy an old home with all the to-dos. Buy new. Visit McBrideHomes.com for details. All right, we have a couple of open lines, 855-282-8255, Lions Choice text line, that same number, 855-282-8255. We want to give out a Communicator of the Day Award winner. Get those texts in right away. We're broadcasting live from the St. Charles Convention Center, site of the St. Louis Golf Expo, and we'll be right back after this.